Welcome to the Talking People podcast. Books. Today I'm going to read books or stories because today I'm going to read an excerpt from Wangari Maathai's autobiography, which is called Unbowed, One Woman's Story. Wangari Maathai came from Kenya. She was from Kenya and she was the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize at some point, but most importantly, she was an amazing woman who changed the world for the better, of course. Well, I'm going to read from chapter 7, which is called Difficult Years, because the other day in class we had a conversation about resilience, well, mostly about feeling overwhelmed by problems in life, you know, when we really need a break or something. And as I was reading this autobiography, I found this story about when Wangari Maathai's husband leaves her, okay? And I think it's very interesting what she says, and it's quite consistent with, you know, this year's course blog for advanced students has a quote by Wangari Maathai saying precisely that in the worst situations ever, we also find opportunities. We just need to see what's there, right? So it's page 141, and I'm going to read page 141, 142, 143, and 144. My copy is hardback, but I think that the page numbering is the same. The editor is William Heinemann, London, and the year is 2007. So that's the reference. Okay, so here I go. Then one day in July 1977, I came back to the home we shared, and although I was used to Mangwangi's going away on long business trips and not coming home at the end of each day, the minute I walked into the house, I could tell that things were different. There was packing material on the floor, some of the paintings on the walls were missing, the curtains, the record player, the television, and other furnishings were gone. I walked through the house and sure enough saw that Mangwangi had taken many of the material possessions he brought to the marriage, including his clothes and special gifts from his friends. "What happened?" I asked the woman who cared for the children and assisted with the housework. "Papa Maathai packed all his things in his car and left," she replied. I was stunned. This was real. Mangwangi had made a decision to leave me. I sat down to listen to myself and reflect on the hurricane of emotions now quickly building inside me. In an instant, I ran through our life together, our courtship and wedding, the joys when the children arrived, the laughter, the quarrels and tears, and now this. I replayed the past like a film, my eyes fixed on nothing in particular. Then a strong force pulled me out of my chair to look for a broom. "Sweep," an inner voice ordered me. I obeyed and walked to the kitchen, found a broom, and started sweeping the rubbish Mangwangi had left behind. I swept in the kitchen and moved into the living room and then the bedroom. I swept the corridors, and out the main door I swept the dust that had been laid bare when Mangwangi packed his things. As I swept, I began to realize that this might be it, that he had gone and that he might not come back. And if he did come back, what would I do? As I swept the last bit, I made a covenant with myself. I will accept. Whatever will be, will be. I have a life to lead. I recalled words a friend had told me, the philosophy of her faith. Life is a journey and a struggle, she had said. We cannot control it, but we can make the best out of any situation. I was indeed in quite a situation. It was up to me to make the best of it. The days that followed were very lonely and sad. I searched my soul constantly for reasons that Mwangi had decided to leave me. I knew that he would blame me for the failure, even as the public too would blame me. It is always the woman's fault. I thought I had done everything, humbled myself, helped with his public role, served him, and loved him. I had tried to be a good mother, a good politician's wife, a good African woman, and a successful university teacher. Is it that those were just too many roles for one person to excel in? Did I miss something I should have paid attention to? Where did I go wrong? Because of the nature of our work, did we spend too much time apart? How could I have done so much for somebody, only to find it had not been enough to keep him with me? How was I going to cope with the three children by myself? These thoughts ran over and over through my mind. The children did not realize a tornado had just passed through our home. I told them nothing, and very little of the turmoil going through me revealed itself to them. They went through their routine that night, and then I tucked them into their beds. As I did, I looked into their innocent eyes and saw them searching mine. They had so much trust in us. "Everything will be all right," I remember telling them as I bid them good night, trying not to reveal my feelings of insecurity and loneliness. The day was finally over. It had been only a few hours since my ordeal had started, but it seemed like an eternity. I went to my bathroom, turned off the last light, lay my weary body down on what was a big, cold and lonely bed, and cried myself to sleep. The following morning I felt as if a close relative had died. You know your loved one has gone, but a part of you wants to believe that perhaps you are dreaming and the person is still alive. When you think about it, however, you realize it is clear that he or she has indeed passed away, and you are overwhelmed by sadness. You step out of your house and you expect everybody to be sad and mourning like you, but you find that nobody else is. The sun has risen, as it always does. Cars are rushing down the streets, and people are going about their business as if nothing had happened. You want to call out and ask them why they don't know your loved one has died or that your husband has left you, but you know you can't. You wonder how they can be so unaware that such an important event has taken place in your life. They should stop everything and cry with me, but they don't. They have no idea what you are going through. Indeed, nobody knows or even cares. I faced such a wilderness and an uncharted path. Yet, I was not the first woman to face this loss, and I will not be the last. I thought about my mother and how she had pulled through her own challenges with no education or financial security and without the exposure I had had to wider experiences. She had spent many years apart from my father, especially during the Mau Mau conflict. If anything, I owed it to her to carry on. One aspect that helped me was that I had become a very independent person during the course of our marriage. Due to the nature of Mwangi's work and mine, and indeed due to my own sense of responsibility, I was making many decisions independently, both at the university and at home. So when he left, very little of my daily routine changed, apart from what I did for him and with him. I still woke up in the morning and went to work. What I did at work stayed the same. At the end of the day, I came home and cooked for the children, helped them with their homework, make sure they had baths, and put them to bed. I kept busy. I didn't have to ask myself or anyone else, what am I going to do now that my husband is not here? I did what I always had. What also helped me during that time was an approach I developed through my work with the Green Belt Movement. Look, I would say to the people working with me, we are on a track that has not been explored before. We are on a trial and error basis. If what we did yesterday did not produce good results, let's not repeat it today, because it's a waste of time. End of quote. Trying to think this way helped me a lot when Mangwangi walked away, because I could have been devastated, completely destroyed, but I had that attitude. If you have given something your best shot and it is still not working, then what else can you do? Nothing. In my marriage, I felt I had done everything there was to be done. I had not succeeded, but I had to stop blaming myself for the failure. I also had to steel myself not to accept the inevitable recrimination from the public. Besides, as I like to tell people, failing is not a crime. What is important is that if you failed, you have the energy and the will to pull yourself up and keep going. I did make one big change, however. In the house we shared, I found myself thinking too much about Mangwangi. The family photographs on the walls, the chair where he sat, and his favorite cup all reminded me of him. I decided it would be good to start anew. The children and I relocated to another university-owned house on Rose Avenue. It was a quiet, leafy neighborhood of Nairobi, not too far from State House, the president's official residence. The house had a large garden where the children could play, and the property had several trees, many of them already mature fruit trees. The children were happy there and enjoyed climbing the trees and eating the fruit straight from the branches. They also found wonderful friends among the local children and spent many hours playing in the compound. I sometimes wonder what I would have become if Mangwangi had not left me, whether I would have followed the path I have. In some ways, his leaving allowed me to choose to take the direction I did. If he had stayed, things might have been very different. The path I would have taken would have been ours and not my own. There are opportunities even in the most difficult moments.
Well, that's all. I hope it's inspiring. Have a nice day.